Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Bidvest's trading update. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of today's presentation. If you should need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I'd like to hand the conference over to the Chief Executive Officer of Bidvest, Mr. Lindsay Ross. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. Very warm welcome to our trading update for this quarter. With me today, we've got Mark Spann, our new CFO, sitting across from me. Welcome, Mark. I think you all know I'm from Investor Relations, our Business Development Director, and we have Julian McMahon, our Transformation Director. So four of our executive directors are here today. And obviously, we welcome Bill Bellew as well, who's helped put this entire team together. The way that we're going to handle it today will be as we normally do. I'm going to give you a bit of a brief overview of how the quarter's gone. Mark will talk a little bit about more particularly balance sheet cash flows, other investments of that nature. Jill will talk on transformation, some of the issues that we face from time to time. And Pumi will talk about how we're finding trading conditions generally in the marketplace. But to kick off and say, look, obviously, I think it's common knowledge that it hasn't been the most exciting quarter in South Africa's economic history. We've seen the gross domestic product numbers come out in the last week or two. But it's, as you all know, a very diverse site. We're exposed to all aspects of the economy. And so we've seen some very, very nice and good performances coming through, and we've seen some fairly tough performances coming through. So if I had to give you an example of tough performances would be in the construction industry. As we all know, virtually every one of those construction businesses are going through very, very difficult times. Where we have exposure to construction, it's been tough. Where we have exposure to different industries, such as agriculture, where the rain's been good other than the Western Cape, things have been particularly good. Where we have exposure, I would say, to the consumer side of the business, to which we are fairly limited, things have also been a little bit tough. We are a very resilient, natured company, as all of you know. We have a large amount of contractual annuity-based businesses. Those businesses like China and our facility management businesses, which are long-term contracts, have done particularly well. So it's been a bit of a mixed bag. We put out our trading update yesterday on FENS. So you've all had a chance to read it. I'm not going to go through the whole thing in detail. I'm sure if anybody hasn't got it, you all have access to it. But I will just try and give you a couple of the highlights of some of the different issues that we've had in this particular quarter. Our exposure to parastatals, municipalities, SOEs, is in a region of about 5% of our total revenue, which is a lot of money in rand, not that big as a percentage. Now it probably sounds a bit low to you guys, but it is still very significant. And we have noticed that most of the SOEs, municipalities, government departments, since December, are in kind of limbo. We're finding places like Eskom just literally going to a standstill. A lot of our industrial supply contracts with them, and Premium will probably touch on that, have really just come to a standstill virtually. And that, I think, is really just a result of the new ministers, the new DGs, the new DDGs, trying to get their heads around what's actually been happening in some of these departments. So there has been a slowing down, particularly in that sector of our market. But it's again, for clarity, we're only exposed to about 5% of that. We mentioned in here in our financial services business, there was a fairly large contract. That was the Sutu government. It was a short-term contract. We will touch on some very big potential other big fleet contracts that we have in the pipeline. But again, they do tend to be SOE stroke municipal related, and decision making, as I've already said, has been rather slow in that regard. We continue our investment activity significantly, and we mentioned in the press release about the 1 billion rand LPG project that's going ahead. It's on track. I think some, I'm not sure if any of these guys went, some of them didn't go down to Richards Bay, and I'm sure you were Whoever did manage to be on that trip would have been very impressed to see the type of infrastructure that we're putting together in South Africa. We're still very, very committed. Does that happen? So you can be on the recorded. We're still very committed to South Africa. It's going through some tricky times at the moment, but we do see, ultimately we do see our long-term future as being a very proudly strong based South African company, and I'm sure Jill will touch on just one or two of the issues of what we're doing in South Africa, the number of people we employ, etc., etc. I think it's probably best that I just move on very quickly to take you through how we're finding business in the various divisions. Our freight operation is doing particularly well. Obviously exposed to specialized resources sectors, and we have seen some very nice commodity movements in some products like chrome, iron ore, manganese, etc. It is a little bit cyclical, so May month is actually a little slow, but now June month it should start to pick up again, from what I've been told. Agriculture has been particularly good. And you know, container movement, particularly in freight, has started to pick up quite nicely. So there are quite positive signs that there are bits of South Africa that are starting to improve, albeit gradually. Our services business, particularly contract to annuity based business, as you all know. Our Noonan and those two, obviously, that division have done particularly well for us. And you'll see when the numbers come out, you saw it in December, the impact of those two acquisitions have been very, very positive for us, and they continue to do that. The industrial services piece of our business, and the business we have in that called TMS, has suffered quite badly in this particular quarter, particularly as Eskom and as I mentioned, and even other petrochemical industries have kind of delayed shutdowns, things have been pushed back a little bit, and we're seeing it in other industrial supply companies as well. Which takes me really on to commercial products. I have mentioned really that our exposure to the consumer sector, which is fairly small, but we do have exposure, and that particular business continues to feel the impact of the tight consumer spend in South Africa. Whereas some of the more basic, light industrial product businesses that we have, like Academy, Sunlink, our material handling business have done very, very nice. Just moving on to financial services, I think I haven't really mentioned, we had the loss of the logistics contract. It was a short-term contract, it was highly profitable because of a short-term. We have had that impact, but there are some nice potential opportunities coming our way. The investment portfolio in our insurance business has also felt, in this particular quarter, felt the impact of the stock market. You've all felt the impact of the stock market, as have we. Automotive, we're quite pleased to see the new vehicle sales are starting to pick up again. But I must just warn that the exposure, maybe you've got exposure to high luxury branded motor vehicles like Daimler Chrysler, Jaguar, Land Rover. Those particular brands are still really suffering. Where we're seeing them, and even brands like Audi, where we're seeing a very nice, a pretty good pickup in Ford, Nissan, bottom end, Toyota, VW, those sort of products that pick up. Used vehicles doing much better. We have had a bit of a fortune clip in our car rental business. We are the fleet there. I think we may have mentioned that. Mark, I think you mentioned, or Peter may have mentioned this in our previous presentation. So we have gone on a very aggressive defleet. But sometimes defleeting like that can come at much, much reduced margins. And we haven't seen that impact come in this quarter. So the overall automotive results, I think I'm reasonably happy with and very disappointed in our car rental result. It's probably the right way to put it. Electrical, considering the industry that we supply, which is particularly construction, I still think they do very, very nicely. We continue to diverse the range of products that we have in that division, and I'm sure maybe Kumin can just touch on that, and you'll see things like prepaid meters, solar geysers. There is alternative energy type products that people have to manage, and that is proving to be a very good, strong resource for us. And I think I have mentioned that in the past. Alphasymtrans, remarkably good results, I think, considering that it's an industry that is generally in decline. I think it's really just a matter of the businesses being better managed, because the traditional office and trunk industry would obviously still continue to be in subtle decline. As a lot of you, just to check around the table, all using pens of paper, which is good. But it is in subtle decline, there's just no doubt about it. But Alphas has done a remarkably good job. They have some big exposure there in chronic malaria to one big government contract that is coming out in one of our at the moment. And we would obviously be able to give you some update on that in the next 6 months. The final one is Namibia, which is really an Achilles heel, folks. We are unfortunately going to have to deal with that as a discontinued operation, probably. The fishing business has actually come out and publicly said that both Oceon and Bluefish will not get any fishing quotas going forward. I don't know if you guys saw that article that was yesterday.
Yeah.
And that no listed companies will get fishing quotas. So we have, and we have emphasized this to you in the past, we have signed a term sheet with a potential buyer. It's gone to the Competition Commission, and we are very hopeful that we will be exiting our fishing business in the next 2 or 3 or 4 months, just based on the process. Once that happens, I think Namibia would then really become, like it used to be, just a division of the West South Africa. And I think it'll be much, we'll be a lot happier about that. Just with regard to our non-core assets, I think it is worth mentioning that Adcock is a listed company, as is Comair. You would have seen their December results, very, very good. They continue to perform well. We continue to see engaged with people with regard to exiting those two businesses. But I think just to give you an example, there was a 6% shareholder in Comair who decided to exit because that Chinese organization that had bought in about 3 or 4 years ago. But an accelerated book build and they sold at 15% discount to market. So I can tell you that there's no way that we as business would be responsible, you know, to our shareholders to even contemplate that. So we continue to engage with numerous, hopefully new black entrants into those two industries, which I think would be fantastic for the country. There is obviously some difficulty in the fund in raising of the funds. So the Adcock value is in the region of about 4 to 4.5 billion, and that's quite a big check to write. And the PRC is already exposed to Adcock, so there's work to be done there. And the Comair one is about 800 million. There is quite a lot of interest in those two assets, but we will continue to be very responsible in that, I suppose. We have no requirements, and even Mark has a bit of a chat about our cash position, our balance sheet, is still in very, very good condition. So there's absolutely no reason why we feel that we should even contemplate trying to sell any of these assets in a big rush without any other requirement. International acquisitions we continue to pursue. We mentioned here a couple of small bolt-ons that really have no impact in these numbers. They're very small. There's a couple that we're still busy with that may well come into the next financial year. And those would be in the region of about 400 or 500 million type acquisitions. But they won't have any impact in this particular financial year. Mark, I think that's probably really what I would like to say. If you could maybe just pick up on the balance sheet, cash flows, interest, finance, whatever.
Thanks, Andy. From a group perspective, the financial position in the balance sheet remains well capitalized. Our net debt has gone up slightly, it's gone up to $10 billion, largely on the acquisition of Noonan and USS, which has obviously already been reported at half year. Our interest cover and our leverage ratios both remain well within target, and there's plenty of headroom there in case we need to raise further funding. Our cash conversion has been good, particularly in relation to last year. And there's always a significant pickup in the last quarter for us in terms of cash conversion, so we're pushing that very hard. Our average funds employed is up Again, mainly due to the acquisition that we've mentioned in terms of Newnham USS, we've had some fixed asset capex. Fixed assets are large, are up about R1 billion, split half and half roughly between freight and our property division, a little bit in Newnham. Roughly is on track, slightly ahead of where we were this time last year. Our inventory has been flat year on year. We've seen a good reduction, you know, off the print business, which was a little bit offset by our excess stock in the automotive, the car rental side, which we touched on earlier. But obviously, we're going through a defleet process there at the moment to try and sort of address that. Trade receivables, aging has stretched out a little bit in comparison to June last year, but largely in track with what we saw in December. To some extent, that was an impact of bringing Newnham on board because they've got slightly longer terms than our SA businesses. Trade payables up about R2 billion, and that's really additional deposits we've raised in BSS, in the financial side, ahead of potential fleet contracts that we're looking at, and the Newnham acquisition coming in. Otherwise, Lindy's touched on the non-core assets, and obviously we're progressing those. Debtors in this environment is obviously a key focus, and we're driving that across the businesses. There is always, certainly up to the time frame, an absorption of working capital in the businesses, which then gets released towards the end of the year. And so obviously we're going to be driving that very, very hard because the numbers last year were very good in that respect. That's it.
Yeah, the only one I didn't touch on, Mark, was Mumbai. Maybe you want to spend 1 minute on that?
Mumbai is something we're aggressively driving. I mean, we hold it as an asset value just a little bit less than, I think, R1 billion. We did sell the equivalent, 6.75%, a couple of years ago, and realized significantly more than what we're currently holding the asset at. You know, and we're engaging with the current controlling shareholder in India, GBK, to get this asset sold. So we have appointed people to assist us with that process.
All right. Jill, do you want to just touch on, are we doing the transformation of BE's forecasts, the challenges, because we have mentioned it a little bit in the
We have put it in, because that is probably the biggest and more strategic issue for us now. But just in general terms, I mean, when you talk about scorecards and DE ratings, we've actually done a lot of work and we've done exceptionally well. And when you look at our companies on an individual basis, and you look at the different levels, about 85% plus of our companies have between a level 1 and a level 4 rating. Of that, over 50% has been basically level 1 and level 2, which is really very good. I mean, you couldn't get any better than that. And those are our bigger businesses, it's not even the small businesses. So they really have tried hard because it does give us a competitive edge in the marketplace, and it has stood us in a good stead. So on that ground and on that level, we do exceptionally well. You know, we spend a lot of money on training. Our businesses have started investing in training academies. They don't only train for our businesses, they train for the industry as well. And that has also stood us in good stead. I mean, we're spending over 350 million rand today on training, and that includes general skills training, industry training, management, services training, everything. We also continue, and we're starting to see an uptick in the development of SMMEs. Obviously, that plays also an important role for us. We try to work more closely with our customers in identifying SMMEs that can fit into our supply chain. Where we are finding challenges is transforming our supply chain in relation to our bigger suppliers, especially where we have to use multinationals that are really just not willing to transform. And it really does impact us negatively in our own procurement scores. And that has a knock-on effect in terms of what we can actually do for our customers. But we do work with them where we can. We try and offer assistance to help them to transform as well. Just in general terms, I suppose our biggest challenge right now is the increase or heightened emphasis, we can call it, on being black-owned. And that means having a shareholding of about 51%. Everybody said, why don't you just fix it and do it? It's not an easy fix, as you can imagine. I mean, the size and the nature of our group, there's no one size fits all. Depending on who you're dealing with, everyone has different requirements in terms of black ownership. So it could range from saying we want this contract to have a 30% of a specific contract to be subcontracted to an SME, to just saying that as a business you have to hold 51% black ownership. It's challenging for us, particularly again because of the nature and the variation of the services and products that we offer. It's not easy to just split a contract. I mean, we're sitting with an example now of quite a massive contract that we tendered on, and 30% of the total value of the contract has to be subcontracted. So to try and find a way that is commercially viable for us as well as the partner is not always that easy. And hence we say we try and work on a case-by-case basis, but we will always make decisions that are going to be commercially viable for both parties. We're not prepared to go into contracts and draw up terms that's actually it's going to be non-profitable for us. It just wouldn't make sense and it wouldn't be responsible of us. So that really is our biggest challenges. And we're finding that the pressure is predominantly coming out of our state-owned entities. As Lindsay said, there's a lot of delays at the moment, and some of those delays have a lot to do with this particular issue about how they get to transfer the supply chain. So whilst they want to do it and they know that they have to do it, they don't always know how. So sometimes we have unrealistic requirements sent down the line to us, and it's really up to us to try and find ways to work with them to come up with some kind of solution.
So on this one large contract as an example, so when do you have to have some sort of plan in place? When does that kick off?
Immediately.
Yeah. So basically, so it starts kicking off without a 30% requirement,
no.
And that comes
with
into play.
So you actually have to go in with a solution.
Okay.
A subcontract.
Otherwise,
you can't think of it. You can't think of it.
So you mentioned that it was quite difficult just to split up the contract, but now you're going ahead with it, so you just find a way to do it.
Yeah.
How do you exactly do that?
Yeah.
Or just maybe a bit of a clearer idea.
I think you should.
We have
found a solution. And it is very large, and we've had requirements in the past to have special purpose vehicles or other types of vehicles for various
JVs
or entities. I think what Jill is really saying is that we can't go and do hundreds and hundreds of these things. Taking it contract by contract, and part of the reason that I wanted to explain to you quite carefully right from the beginning is we've only had 5% exposure to SAEs, and that's where the biggest demand is really coming from. And the difficulty that we have, which I think Jill has explained, is that there's not one model at all. So in that particular case, 30% had to be outsourced. In another case, 51% black ownership. In another case, 30% black woman.
Yeah.
And so one is working, and it's not just us, all corporate SA is working with government through BLTA, which firms will touch on, in order to see if we can get a much more acceptable solution where we at least you know what the rules are.
But other than that, we continue and we try our best. I mean, we always say as long as we make sure our noses are clean and we're doing our level best to do the right thing always, we continue to do that and we work, as the challenges come. Just recently, they've also, again, unfortunately, because it does set you back a bit, they've put out a proposal for amendments to the code again, and that's just another spin on things. So some of the work that you've done, kind of saying thank you very much, but this is the new requirements now. But they have to figure out a way to work around it.
But I don't want this to be a negative sentiment.
No,
we're doing
not.
Exceptionally well. It's still said we've got 50% of businesses at level one or two. And if the scorecard is what the measurement criterion was, we would be fine. The difficulty we're finding out is, in simple terms, that tenders will come out with very specific conditions. And if you don't comply with that condition, then don't bother to tender. So you'll actually, that's probably enough.
Yeah, that's great.
Thanks, Tom.
So can we just finish and then we'll open for questions?
Yeah. So this will be all the good news.
So third quarter new business activity has been great. We've seen a really nice uptick. I must though indicate that it has been driven mainly by a lot of our existing large contracts that have come out on tender. So a big focus over the next couple of months is going to be on retention and making sure that we secure that business. Those particular contracts are really significant in size and very strategic. So we've got very senior big teams that are looking at that. The pipeline is the largest I've ever seen over the last 5 years. It's sitting at around 2.3 billion. So it's quite big, and I'll talk to that a little bit later. But obviously those decisions will only be made in the next financial year because we're already in June, so we're not going to see any of that come through now. From a market perspective, Lindsay's already touched on the construction industry. We're having lots of conversations with our clients in that industry who unfortunately are telling us that they think that it's going to remain tight probably for the next 5 years still. So, I mean, a lot of those guys are trying to restructure their business, and we're just trying to align ourselves as best as we can. In the mining industry, the conversations are, whilst it is difficult, some of our clients have sold off some of their assets or closed mine shafts, we've lost some of that business. If they've sold it off, we've tried to retain it with the new miners. But what is good is that we are seeing some reinvestment into some of the existing mines. So we're also starting to see a little bit of an uptick there. And then the petrochemical industry, unfortunately, remains very tight. Shutdowns are being pushed out. So as Lindsay had said, Eskom is tight, Sasol, etc. There is a big Sasol shut that is coming the 9th September. But generally, the trend, I would probably say over the last couple of years, is very little maintenance work that's been done. Margins, we are retendering at far lower prices. That is just the reality. Clients are right-sizing their own supply chain, so margins are under pressure. And clients are also kind of respecing their contracts. So where a contract had a particular spec, if you're an existing service provider, they'll downspec it so that they can bring down the price. But, I mean, it is what it is. That's how the market is going at the moment. Lindsay also talked about the political space. So, I mean, while coming out of December, the right noises were being made and the right decisions have been made. I am very anxious about the fact that the next 12 months is going to be an electioneering period. And once it gets like that, we're going to see very little decision-making coming out of local government, national, etc., because the focus is going to be on the 2019 elections. So that does worry us a little bit. But having said that, overall, year-to-date, up until the end of quarter three, the numbers are looking great. Tracking previous year, and we will finish higher than the previous financial year for the full 12 months. And just some of the big stuff, to give you some indication, on the hygiene side, we've been awarded the national tender for Nedbank. Our water business, Puro, is doing very well, getting lots of work, FMP, Sun International, Clover, etc. On the automotive side, we were awarded a contract from Total to supply 180 units, which is quite significant. So one of the focuses there on the automotive side, from an SML perspective, I mean, our auto business in terms of fleet is obviously directly linked with the West Bank. So with the West Bank, it's a fleet deal, they supply the units. But we're aggressively going out and talking to all the other banks to say, we can compete on the fleet side, but once you have secured the business, if you send a bank or app, etc., there's no reason why we shouldn't be providing the units through our auto business. So this contract, for example, was actually, the FMR was awarded to AXA, but we're providing the actual vehicle. And I suppose the big win, we're busy renewing our leases for the lounges at the airport. 5 years, we've just got one little clause to iron out, but that's generally a done deal, so those lounges have been renewed outside of the ground handling license. In terms of future business prospects, I did say that our pipeline is around 2.3 billion, of which 1.6 billion is existing business, and some of the big tenders that are out at the moment, Transnet, so that should be new for us. We had Transnet, lost it in the previous round, so we're now re-tendering. That's quite significant in that fleet, so that's for business bank. Gillian has already alluded to the treasury contract for office automation. That's existing business for us, which is quite significant. And then there's a lot of stuff with AXA. So our car rental leases are all out on tender at the moment. Our British Red ground handling license is also out on tender. And then there's also a tender for all the retail spaces
in all the airports. There's about 94 visa spaces that are out, and we've obviously got the leads. So through that process, we'll be tendering. Yeah, and those are some of the big ones. If I then just lastly touch on our public sector exposure, Lindsay has spoken about the fact that it's 5%, which is a big number, but it's, you know, the exposure relative to turnover isn't that big. Where that exposure specifically sits, the big one is obviously Transnet, and it's obviously our freight leases, but just obviously contextualize that risk specifically on the leases is spread over a 20 to 25 years back. It's not a risk that sits within a particular financial year. Telkom is the next one, which is mainly fleet contracts with the Business Bank and facilities management with the Business FM. AXA, and I've already spoken about the AXA stuff, so it's car rental, it's the Lini, it's the Business Bank, all the work that you do at the airport through the license, and then SAA and ECO.
Right, so overall, you know, it has been good with the 3 months, or most of the income, so we can work with that. But I'm still pleased with the overall results. I've seen some really, really good individual performances from a number of our businesses. And the ones that have battled a little bit are the ones that I think we would expect them to be battling a little bit. So there are no real surprises, our shops, decent set of numbers so far. And obviously we've got another month to go, and hopefully we can deliver up to your expectations. Right, so we open for questions.
So operator, if you could queue the questions online, we'll take a few here in the room, and then come back to you.
Thank you. If I can just advise the participants online on the queuing process. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and 1 on your touchtone phone, and that will place you on the question queue. If you are able to withdraw the question, you're welcome to press star then 2 on your touchtone phone to remove yourself from the question queue. Just a reminder, should you wish to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then 1. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious about if you have actually explored.
Speak up, sir.
Oh, sorry. So just around the permanent kind of BEE or empowerment kind of scheme, like, you know, we've seen the last successful MTN kind of exploring and putting those into place. Have you looked at that? And I know you always come to the complexity of empowering at procurement level, but perhaps talking to government about how you could integrate and maybe consolidate your BE status into something like that.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if you're aware, but we, I think the difference is there's been about 4 very significant BE deals in this history. We're 50 years old this year. The last big one was the Lutler one, which expired about 2 or 3 years ago. Black ownership per our scorecard is 39%. So it's not really practical for us to go and do another big BE transaction at this stage. We're going to look at individual requirements per contract that people, I think Jill was referring to, and rather have structures of that nature.
Can I just add to that, from the customer side and from government side as well, they actually want to see people actively involved in the operation, you know, and having a portion of that particular operational business or cluster of businesses. So, you know, even if we had to go and do one at the top, they're still going to ask for the offer requirements for operational involvement and shareholders as well.
There's some new entrants into the industry, so yeah. That's really what I was referring to. I think there's a big opportunity with Adcock and Comair to bring new black entrants into those particular industries.
Well, Catherine? Yeah. I'm not sure who wants to speak on services, but maybe if you can just take us through the pricing dynamics when you're going back to contract in the case of renewal, or is that pricing flat, is the pricing down? How open are your clients to maybe passing through the wage portion of it? If you can just maybe just paint a picture of what it's like out there at the moment.
So, pricing down, not flat. Definitely. But remember that you've got a period to step up the price. So even though you're pricing down, you've got a 5-year contract. So over the 5 years, you're then able to build it up again.
But definitely, at the point that you tender, you're definitely done, because everybody's looking for something cheaper than what they currently have. Our ability to recover wages is good. I mean, in the services business, the conversation with the client is we pay people and it's wages, and it's statutory. So in this country, there's a statutory wage rate, and you have to recover the statutory wage rate. If you're going to have a negotiation where you then don't recover 100%, it's in that non-statutory piece. So generally, the guys are really good in terms of recovery. I must also say that the challenge that we are going to be facing over the next couple of months is the new minimum wage that's just been set now. That, on the cleaning side, won't have too much of an impact, but within our security business, in the what is called rural areas, so they kind of split it urban rates and rural rates, those tend to be much lower. So we're going to have to recover quite significantly, about 20% there, in order to bring it in line with the new minimum wage. But again, we have to recover it. So conversations going back to clients to say there's a new minimum wage, you all know, it's a South African phenomenon. And then you need to look at those contracts.
And then just with your clients, to what extent is there a thing saying, well, we will renew on the hygiene, but we don't necessarily want the water and the flowers anymore? Or, I mean, is there that kind of sort of rejigging of the portfolio?
No. Because normally you renew for commodities. And then if it's sitting in the facilities management basket, it all gets renewed together.
Okay.
No.
And interestingly, our water business and our flower business are doing exceptionally well. We said, I don't know where you're coming from. You don't think that people would be downscaling. So we might get into the market share. The numbers there are particularly good.
But following on from there, talk about you're sitting down on the existing contract. What is the other competitive environment? Is there a risk that you're going to lose contracts because the competitors are strengthening, or is there that kind of efficiency to get the contract?
So if I think about our services businesses, it's always competitive. So I mean, just to give you a sense, there's something like 5,000 registered cleaning companies and 4,000 registered security businesses, and that's really just the landscape of it. So it's always been like that. Our services results are very good. There have been areas, one or two, where we've lost what is a big contract, but one or two out of many that we've gained. So I do think that we remain very competitive. We have very strategic conversations with our clients around understanding what it is that you're trying to achieve and make sure that even though we're taking down, we still need to be able to deliver a service within a particular brand, right? We don't want to drop service delivery and have operational issues. So we have to find that fine balance. So we engage with our clients all the time so that it is a win-win at the end of the day. But there haven't been any material losses, so I would say we remain very competitive.
Right. Maybe a question for you and then kind of a follow-up question for Mark, and it's really on green shoots in the economy. You mentioned really one container traffic picking up a little bit. Is anything else happening? Most of the companies we've heard reporting this year have said absolutely nothing, in fact, things are almost going backwards.
So the renewable energy example, with the wind farms, the solar farms, that's going to happen, and that started. We've seen quite a lot of activity there. Agriculture, the grain crop, that market's probably better than me because it's just come out of there, is exceptionally good. So the ships are lining up at Durban Port. And then in our SACD, which is our container operation, we're starting to see a pickup in containers, both on air freight and on sea freight. So we can always tell what's inside them.
Yeah.
Because when I add a bit more,
On the freight side, I mean, you'll see when the numbers come out. The freight volumes have generally been good, but again, you've got an annuity side on the liquid side, which builds steadily at your 8-10% a year. There's obviously some infrastructure spend which has gone into that. So we've got multi-purpose tanks and some other tanks which have come on board through this time frame. It's obviously helping us. So the liquid side has been okay, and the agricultural commodity side has been okay. Funny enough, the drought in the Western Cape has been helpful to us because we don't mind imbalances, as long as they're big imbalances. Because then you get flows either way, and we're a handling business, we're a servicing business. As long as cargo is either imported or exported, it's to our advantage. And so we've seen enormous inflows of wheat and enormous outflows of maize. And the maize crop, again, has been good. We've seen big pickup now in sort of the fourth quarter, so that's continuing to run. So the commodity side, the agricultural commodity side has been good. The mineral commodity side has been a mixed bag. We saw quite a nice pickup in the first quarter, and then it seemed to then slowed right down coming into the fourth quarter. So it's sort of all over the place at the moment. I think the mining guys are in a tough space. And then as Lindsay said, you know, we've seen a little bit of a pickup on the air freight side. We've seen a reasonably good pickup on the sea freight side.
And then what are your debtors looking? You have to pick up what the consumer's feeling and your customers. Are they
so
very cautious?
So, I mean, the debtors book is roughly in line, certainly with where we saw it in December. So from an aging profile point of view, it's the same. That's a little bit longer than it was in June of last year. And we ascribe that essentially to two things. One, with bringing Noonan on board, their age profile was a little bit different to ours, a little longer. So that has had an impact. And obviously we've seen, I mean, guys trying to stretch payment terms. So
you've seen many liquidations, which is quite remarkable,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. So not in writing debt off, but certainly in terms of pushing terms, that's out there. And obviously, our guys manage that very closely.
Operator, maybe we can take Nick Webster's question.
Thank you. Nick Webster of HSBC, please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Sorry I couldn't be there. Two questions, if I could. Firstly, I think you mentioned, obviously, a bit about some local bolt-ons and acquisitions and things. I wonder if there's any further updates on potential internationals, whether that's alongside Noonan or a separate platform. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe you missed out on a sort of pest control related business recently in the UK. I wondered if there were sort of any others in the pipeline there maybe that you're in discussions with.
There's nothing internationally that's progressed to any extent where we would need to make any sort of announcements or anything like that. There are a couple of specific hygiene businesses that we are aware of that will be coming to market, but probably only in the next 12 to 18 months. Pest control businesses would be fairly small bolt-on ones that would assist in our Noonan facility management type business. So our M&A team and our services CEO, Premier himself, has been overseas quite extensively, and we continue to pursue those opportunities, but there's nothing we need to report on at this stage.
Okay. And I think, Lindsay, you mentioned it at the beginning, a trip to Richards Bay, which I believe was a fairly selective shareholder trip. I wondered why that wasn't open to the wider investment community. And alongside that, maybe could you remind us of then the commissioning timeline versus the CapEx spend on the LPG facility?
You think I can afford this one on to Hilda?
Nick, we want to go show everyone Richards Bay when the LPG project is a little bit further advanced. For us to show you something, we actually even contemplated having today there, but it just is not logistically possible at this point in time. So we did choose to take South African shareholders only to that site. You will get an opportunity within the next 12 months to go and see it. In terms of the timeline, the site has been handed over to the contractor. They will start piling. The bullets or the tanks are being manufactured, and the team is actually going to China this month to go and check progress. The bullets are expected to arrive in South Africa in the end of the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter next year, and commissioning is still targeted for the 1st of July 2020.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other questions around the table?
Some information on the international business or acquisition. Have you walked away from acquisitions over the last 12 months? And if you have, can you give us a feel for the reasons behind it? Is the capital discipline that you are applying over there? So in other words, you want to be overseas, but you're not willing to pay or overpay. Or is it just unable to find a life?
Yeah. So there's been probably two that we've moved away from. One is local. And there were very specific reasons why we didn't like what we found in the due diligence process. And we're very disciplined about that. If we're uncomfortable with the due diligence process, if we're uncomfortable with the management team or whatever it might be, and it happened in one particular South African large acquisition, was about 3 to 4 billion rand acquisition. And we were very pleased later on because there's some really bad news came out of it.
Also concentration
risks, as you mentioned. Yeah. And then internationally, we walked away, I think I may have mentioned it before, from one particular deal where we got exclusivity, and it's really just a matter of the hedge fund stroke private equity guys became extremely difficult when it came to break fees, the sale and purchase agreements they were prepared to sign, etc. And again, I think just to be cautious, we obviously take those always back to our acquisition committee, and then as soon as we get to a stage where uncomfortable. So it's not price. The price was actually agreed in both cases. It was more a matter of being uncomfortable either with the sale and purchase agreement or with the due diligence. And when we did lose on price, but it was quite small.
And then just in the freight business going forward, I mean, if you've had quite a strong or solid year in that freight business, the themes that have played out and how you see that going forward in the next 6 to 12 months.
Well, we've spent, I think Ilse and I in our previous roadshows and Mark, we have spent quite a significant amount of capex in our trading business. So we built a field station of Puma, about 300 million, we built thereabout. The multi-purpose tanks for about 350 million. We're now spending R1 billion on the South Deep project. So we're moving a lot, and all of those are niche type income businesses. So Puma takes 100% of the take off of those fuel tanks from day one.
Correct.
Most of the most business tanks are pre-sold.
Correct.
And the LPG tanks are pre-sold.
Pre-sold.
So we're moving away from having exposure to, example, commodity movements into an ERT-based business, which has been an aggressive act.
You've got to have a strategy. It's closed. Western Cape has no rain this year, and the next year it has rain. And so, it's quite difficult, particularly on things like the agricultural flows, and to some extent on the middle commodities, to predict what's going to happen. So we're going to be moving upwards of 40% of that freight division is going to be large annuity type business, particularly through the gas and liquid side of it. And obviously, that's been a strategy to be driving to say that component of the results is quite predictable, to try and balance off a little bit the unpredictability on the commodity movements.
We're quite optimistic. I don't know if that answers your question. Over the next 2 or 3 years, we're very optimistic about the potential of our freight operation.
So I'm going back to the contracts, but you spoke about 2.3 billion new business, 1.6 billion that's being up for renewal. And the Pumi, you spoke about the margin pressure on new business, but that you're able to recover it over time. Can you maybe just give some indication of what that typical margin pressure is? So are you pricing down 10%, 15%, how big that is? And then what does the salary entail? Is it above inflation, or is it cost recovery on your side where you become more efficient and you take out costs of the business? Or just exactly what that entails to get up to, I would assume there's some normalized margin that you're working on in the business.
Mm-hmm. So too. So, I mean, it depends contract by contract, but I would probably say that the trend is probably pricing down from high double digits to just under, I mean, by the time a contract comes out to tender, you're probably sitting at margins of about 15 to 18%, and you'll price that down. 12 is great, but sometimes you're pushed even lower depending on size of contract, who the client is, etc., and how aggressively we want to keep it. In terms of getting the number back up, so yes, you're right, it's a combination. So first you do have to look at efficiency. I mean, interestingly, Noonan have got a model where they're able to get 10% back up in year one. So one of the things that our guys are looking at is learning from what they're doing around getting a 10%. So at the moment in the South African environment, we don't get 10% back in year one, but clearly there's an opportunity to do that. So you look at efficiencies, you obviously get your annual increases, which are inflation related. So if you take that over a 5-year period, you're able at the end of the 5 years to comfortably get a feedback up to that 15-18% kind of margin. But it is a combination of that. One of the things that also happens is that generally over a 5-year period, clients also open up new offices, they move into different offices, they add other services, etc. So sometimes you find a client, a contract goes really nicely because of all those other internal moves that a client may also make.
Can I just add to that? Don't you get a business is a very large, diverse business? So you might have strong margin pressure on a particular security contract, and we might gain significantly elsewhere. So our overall, when we release our results, we say our overall margin is the same as last year.
Yeah.
No decline in margin. Because we managed to do, you can put premiums down, you know, in different ways.
Local acquisition process. You guys mentioned Glen Drive Trade before and Mercantile Trade.
So surprisingly, Mercantile started a process through Deutsche, which was public knowledge about 4 months ago, and they've never ever come back to anybody to tell us what really is going on. It's quite a peculiar, it's the most peculiar process I've ever experienced in my career, to be quite honest. And I think everybody else is just throwing their hands up to them and saying what the hell's going on. So it is owned by the Portuguese government, as you know, Croatia. And I think it's just red tape in the government organization like that. But also remember they're very uncomfortable with the size of the business they received. So we really I can't give any more progress on that. I'm sure you all know what's happening to Deutsche in South Africa, so there's nobody even to talk to really in South Africa anymore. Just on Glenrod, you know, they haven't started a proper process either on the actual freight side, and they put out a notice saying that they were still waiting to see how well their listing went for their shipping business in Nasdaq. I think they were going to do it, and at the appropriate time they would come out to the process. So they haven't done it, so it's just been delayed.
Right. So, just having a look at your positive outlook, be it in the short to medium term, and then you seem to be quite happy if these deals don't take place. Maybe in the short to medium term, that organic growth would be sufficient via new contracts to keep momentum again if any substantial deals don't occur in that period. You're talking about some sort of green shoots. Would that be a reasonable sort of summary of that type of scenario?
I think that's probably reasonable. But we are still aggressively acquisitive. It's a matter of finding the right acquisition, particularly on the international front. And we have come out and said that we really want to be we want to operate internationally only in industries that we're really comfortable that we can make a difference. And you'll see with something like Luna, which is very specialized facility management, I think we've made quite a big difference there, and it's doing particularly well. We'd be quite cautious about, we're not going out and just buying anything that moves. That's really is the question. In South Africa, we tend, because we're really a large operator in many of the industries which we play in, they tend to be bolt-on acquisitions that we operate in. If I give you an example of that, I'm sure out of the Steinhoff Group, Unitrans will come out. you soon, I'm sure. You know, neither ourselves, nor Imperial, nor Barloworld could buy any trains. We just, the OEMs wouldn't allow it, the competition commission wouldn't allow it, etc. So we are somewhat limited in very significant local acquisitions. And that is really part of our strategy why we went to Gulfshore as well.
So presumably in retrospect, looking back when you guys were talking, what, 2-3 years ago about some fairly large offshore acquisitions, the timing would be better now with global markets under pressure.
Yeah, so that's why we are still aggressively acquisitive internationally. We are looking very hard. But only in industries where we're very comfortable to play in a big wide world. Because I think a lot of South African businesses have gone internationally, tried to play in the big wide world and have burnt their fingers. And we had the experience with our food service business, which we grew, you know, extensively for the last 25 years. We really didn't understand that you need to go there knowing what you're doing and operating niche markets.
Operator, can we take Brent's question, please, and then we'll come back to the room.
Thank you. The next question comes from Brent Noddle of RENCAP.
Yes, hi, good morning. I have three questions, if I can, all on the automotive side. Just on the car rental front, I mean, you alluded to at the interim stage and again today about defleeting. Can you give an indication of the quantum in terms of value terms, how much that defleeting has already progressed and if there's still quite a bit more to go? And I wonder if you could, sorry, I'm just not quite 100% clear as to why specifically you guys experience some margin pressure on the car rental side. I know that you did allude to that there was a bit of a mix issue, so I wonder if you could just detail that for me. My second question, on the Lesotho fleet, you know, whether that fleet has indeed been defleeted already and whether you guys are expecting to recognize any residual value gains for the period. And then my last question, again, as you alluded to, on the luxury part of the new vehicle sales, which has been under quite a bit of pressure, can you give us an indication of what percentage of new vehicle sales specifically comes from that luxury segment? Thanks a lot.
I'm afraid I don't think I'm going to be able to answer any of those questions. Yeah, that really is detailed financial stuff that we don't disclose at this point in time, and in fact quite a lot of the questions you've asked we don't disclose at all, even at financial year, and so I'm afraid I can't answer those at this stage. Come out year end, and when we publish our actual financial results, you'll be able to get a little bit more input, but we don't disclose the percentage of our luxury vehicle market as opposed to our general market.
Sorry, and while we're on the line, we'll come back to the room. Another question, question from David.
And the next question comes from David Fu of Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Great. Hi, guys. Thanks very much. I think this is more a question for Mark. I mean, I understand you guys still remain highly acquisitive, but it seems like you're going to have a decent amount of proceeds coming from some of your disposals. Balance sheet continues to move into a decent position. I'm just wondering to what extent are you happy with your capital structure, and is there some sort of opportunity to see sort of better shareholder returns in the near term? I think in particular, given that your ability to deploy capital, in particular through M&As, seems fairly limited over the next 12 to 18 months.
I think we're very happy with where the capital structure sits at the moment. I don't think there's any intention to be releasing additional reserves to the shareholders. I mean, as to what happens with the unwind, for example, of the non-core assets, it really depends on the timing. You know, we have committed to trying to unload those assets within the next 2 to 3 years. We're a year down that line now. We've still got 2 years to go. And there isn't a specific, as you say, a specific acquisition on the table, but there are a number of things that we are looking at. So I think that we would largely try and maintain our capital structure as it currently sits and try and balance the offshore capital requirements on acquisition against what we might realize coming from the sale of the non-core assets.
Okay, thank you very much.
Roman, you were next in
line. Then more of a strategic question. Are you changing the way you think about next year and the year after, given being to a fairly slow start to the year? It's maybe not too surprising, and there may be structural reasons for it. Is there anything that worries you about the fact that there's just no growth in the country at the moment? But SOEs are being fixed, political changes, groups, you know, these things should flow after that. But are you here thinking, you know, this might flow to years 2 and 3 and you start to adjust your business, or are you not too worried about short-term issues?
I wouldn't think so. I think we touched on the fact that we're going into an election year, and there's going to be a lot of electioneering running around in the next year, which will probably not have too much excitement in the corporate, in the SOE world or the corporate world. But we're not changing our view. Now, we continue, as I said, we're very positive about South Africa, continue to invest quite significantly wherever we can. We're busy with the 2 bulk plants in South Africa. They're both about 500 million, to give you an idea, what we would refer to as a bulk plant. But I don't think we've changed so much at all. Things are just a bit slow at the moment. I think everybody got a little bit too optimistic about what happened in December, you know, and expected the whole world to change. So Africa Inc. is a big ship, and it's taking time to turn it. And I think it'll take a good year before that really happens.
Look, the good thing that the changes will bring that underlying is that whilst there's going to be a slowdown in decision-making, at least governments are going to come back. And the playing field is going to be fairer, which we haven't had for the last 2 to 3 years. So, well, those decisions may take long, but at least we certainly have far more confidence in the process.
Can the government do more or less outsourcing?
I'm sure they're going to have to do more. One of the difficulties you've got dealing with some of the SOEs and governments is the changes that are taking place. So, Premier and myself, Jill, we'll get very close to a particular department or a particular SOE, and then suddenly there's a significant change in the management infrastructure, and you're starting it. I just want to touch on the solar geyser example, which was moved from Eskom to DOE to now Central Energy Fund. Yeah. It just delays everything. You get really close to one, if you want to add to this.
Yeah.
As you know, Transnet is going through some turmoil. The CFO left a month or 2 months. Who knows what other change will come? Eskom has gone through a complete and absolute turnaround. So
Transnet is having its inquiry coming up now as well.
So nothing negative. It's just, it makes life a bit tough when you get very close to certain, and pretty corporates as well. It's not just this major changes at particular corporates, major changes at cities, makes business development, from Premier's perspective, just maybe go back 3 months, and then you go forward again.
If I can just also answer your question around, is government likely to enforce more or less? So it's interesting, in the last year, we've had lots of conversations with SOEs and big government departments who wanted to enforce, actually. The challenge that they face is that you can't have a conversation that says you've got a bloated public sector, and then when you enforce, all the people that we have in an outsourced environment, you now actually need to hire within the environment, so you need to create an entire internal infrastructure to manage all the enforced operations, which means that you have to employ a whole lot of additional people, when in fact you should be right-sizing the public sector. So it's been interesting that those conversations that we've had in the last year, and SARS is one of them, SARS wanted to enforce, and they've kept to the same strategy in their outsourcing, because when you actually do the numbers, it actually doesn't work. So that's been interesting. Those conversations have been happening, and none of the SOEs or government departments that we were engaging with ended up enforcing.
Okay, last question from Daniel.
Okay, it's a short question, but it was hard to get quite decent income from investments in corporate line of base. Can you chat about how that's performing now?
In the bank. So it was 17. So then I'll remember what goes through that line is BitCorp, Mile, various bits and pieces, and our corporate office cost base. Okay? We've got no control over where those share prices and the currency end up at the end of June. We have said that there is generally about 200 million rand worth of cost every 6 months within the corporate office that is in that line. That includes our sponsorship, this, all of this stuff. It's not a target to spend that money, but that's sort of a guideline. And from there, it can be anything. So we can't give any further guidance on that. That's great.
Yeah.
You were just adjusted for your disappointment, that one.
All right. Can we? All right. Thanks, operator. There's no other questions on the line, so I think we are done.
Thank you very much.
On behalf of Bidvest.
Thank you. On behalf of Bidvest, that concludes this morning's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.